The time is 3:24. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We are the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the host of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Today is a special short edition of the Pronk Pop Show. Usually we're scheduled from approximately 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock on Wednesdays. I completed my Wednesday show, but today we have something really historic that I wanted to give you my reaction to, and that is the Supreme Court decision regarding the constitutionality of the what is commonly referred to as Obamacare, or the Affordable Care Act is the more technical name, but I will refer to it as Obamacare. The decision really surprised a lot of people. It really didn't surprise me, except for the logic. I thought it was very much a coin toss, namely a 50-50 proposition. And I fully expected it to be a 5-4 decision, maybe 6-3, but I really did not expect the rationale given. And namely that Chief Justice John Roberts decided with the liberal members of the court and upheld Obamacare, arguing that why it was not constitutional in terms of the Commerce Clause of the Constitution, which was the justification given by the federal government in appealing the decision to the Supreme Court, but rather Obamacare is constitutional because it is a tax. And what's interesting, and for those that listen to my, this first time you're listening to the Pronk Pop Show, you can go to my companion blog, which is Pronk Pops, that's pronkpops.wordpress.com. And at the very top, I have links to not only this show, but past shows. People that are listening right now or we're streaming the audio, but most of my listeners, I would say almost all of them, 99.9999%, listen the podcast. And if you're, and you have links at the very top that will take you to today's show. So you can go to my blog, Pronk Pops, using that URL address and get to the broadcast. And I emphasize that usually in the beginning or sometime, you know, in the early part of the show, because I do give you some additional information that's available, including I have a link on this is going to be a short segment. It'll probably be less than an hour, probably might even only be about 30 minutes, because I'm going to strictly try to confine my comments to how really the politics of this Supreme Court decision. What you're getting right now, the decision is a fairly long one. What surprised everybody was that Chief Justice Roberts basically was the swing voter here. And the justification given for that this legislation was constitutional is that Congress does have the power to tax, which is absolutely correct. It does. I mean, the reason why we have a constitution as opposed to a government under the original Articles of Confederation is one of the powers that was lacking was the power to raise revenue or taxes. And our Constitution has that power, and is clearly in the power to raise taxes. So that said, though, that was not the rationale, legal rationale, given for implementing this. The justification was under the Commerce Clause, and the problem there is forcing, you know, what this law does is require you to purchase health insurance. If you, in other words, if you don't, if your employer does not provide you with a group health insurance plan, that's specifically one that is approved by the government. In other words, has the provisions in it and the coverage in it that the government says you should have, and that's why many people that you know, that are perfectly happy with their existing plans are going to see over the next 2 or 3 years that those plans will go away. Because if they make any significant changes to the plan, then you have to go to one of these government-approved plans, and that's one of the problems that I have with it. That's interfering with, as I said yesterday, you know, somewhere between about 80-85% of the people have their coverage through their employer and the group plan. You know, other people have their coverages, they buy it individually. But most people, it's really through the employer. And the employer goes out and purchases is a plan and covers the employees. Well, now, if usually what happens every year, plans are up for renewal. And that means typically premium increases. But also there could be changes in the coverage. Well, if there's any change in the coverage at all, then it's considered a new plan, and any new plan has to meet the requirements that the government sets forth as to who is covered and who's in the benefits that or the coverages that you have. That's kind of a little background. Now the problem. Let's assume for a minute that you don't have coverage. If you're an individual, you're going to have to buy it. And if you don't buy individual coverage, you're going to be forced to pay a tax penalty. And that tax penalty, initially, the first year is 2014. It starts at $95. You know, that's minor. It quickly goes up to $695 or, I think it's 2.6. I have it. Hang on a minute. I have two screens, and I had to get the cursor. I have for each segment, including this show, I have videos as well as articles and links. In this case, a link to the actual Supreme Court decision. But I also have an article that really goes into the tax. Really, your increases in taxes, how the tax law is changed if Obamacare goes into effect. Yes, it was 2.5, excuse me, it's not 2.6. It's 2.5% of your income. That's starting in 2016. So you're going to have a penalty initially of only $95, but it quickly goes up to $695, and I fully expect that it will go up even higher over the years. So what they're trying to do is force you to buy coverage, and what's going to happen is a lot of small companies that can't afford to cover their people, it's cheaper for them to pay the penalty. What's going to happen is it's going to kill health insurance ultimately, because what's going to happen is more and more employers are going to do away with their plans. They're going to say, hey, you're on your own. Pay your own penalty, or if it's a group plan, if you're in a group situation, you know, the employer is better off offering you no insurance and paying the penalty. I hope I'm making that clear. You know, the option is either buy coverage that we say that probably is going to cost a lot more, your premiums, especially because it's community rated, which means they got to take everyone gets the same rate. So when it's community rated plans are always the more expensive plans, because if you're in a community rated situation, like with large groups, you got to take everybody. So if someone has cancer or heart condition or strokes, it's more likely that they're going to have high claims. And when they're part of the plan, it invariably means much higher premiums, as opposed to, you know, with individual coverage, if you ever have been in this market, and I used to sell this, so that's why I'm a little bit knowledgeable. Individual plans, you had just like individual life insurance, you would have to fill out a questionnaire. So if you had serious medical conditions, one or two things are going to happen. Either they're not going to take you, or they're going to rate you, which means that you're going to have to pay more, a percentage more than what everyone else pays. Now, with larger groups, let me back up. With smaller groups, there are usually a few health questions, but with larger groups, there are no health questions. And so, assuming someone has a pre-existing condition, namely they've, let's say, had one or two or three heart attacks or they've had cancer. What's going to happen is over time they're probably going to be have another heart attack or another relapse of cancer, which means much higher benefits have to be paid out. And when that event occurs, the next year when the insurance is up for renewal, they're going to the insurance company does this, the renewal premiums will be much higher. So what they're trying to do, what the Democratic Progressive Party is trying to do, what the progressives in the Democratic Party are trying to do, is they want single payer. You know, President Obama has said that. You know, when he's talking to his union friends, he's very honest about it. You know, I'm for single payer. Now, when he talks to the American people, he talks out of it the other side of his mouth. You know, he initially was not for the mandate. When he was running, he was critical of Senator Clinton for being for the mandate. Now, I'm not for the mandate at all, but I'm just saying when President Obama was running for president, and there are clips out there that I'm, you know, President Obama saying, I'm against the mandate. And the reason why is there are people that, frankly, cannot afford health insurance. And there are also people that are very young that don't want health insurance. They make that decision. And the reason why they don't want it, they understand that in their young years, and we're talking between 18 and 29, are the one group that historically have not been, I'm not saying if you're in that age, they're not people of that age that have health insurance. That's not true. There are people that do. But there are people that don't want to pay for it. You know, some employers, for example, might pay half and require you to pay half. And if you're very young, some people say, well, I'm not going to pay the premium, especially if it's much, you know, it's, you know, let's say it's a couple of $100 and you have to pay half of that. Let's say it's $150. You say, well, you know, that's $1,800 that I'd rather spend on something else, a new car, a vacation, whatever. Now, statistically, they're rolling the dice, but here's the thing. You know, young people as a group have a very low incidence of morbidity or have health problems. And because of that, you know, that's one of the reasons why they historically have not bought health insurance. Now, as you get older, and especially as you get married and you're going to have children and your wife is going to have to give birth, usually what happens is once a person gets married, suddenly they're very, very interested in health insurance. You know, that's been my experience. Because they think they're going to have kids, and kids are going to have medical problems. So there might, or, you know, you might have a tough delivery of a baby or a premature baby that would run into tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars. So that's when you typically, young people, get on the insurance or try to get insurance. But when they're single and young, they generally, as a group, do not buy it. And that's their choice. You know, it's America. It's your money. You earned it. You decide how you're going to spend it. I don't think it's the responsibility of the government to tell you what you should buy, period. And that's the problem. That's the objection and the problem with the mandate. And this was really a first that the government, that the, this is the first time the government is mandating that you have to buy something. And I was really taken aback that and so is the, I think, the general conservative base, or not only the conservative base, but the libertarian base was taken aback because initially I was taken aback. Remember, Judge Roberts, Chief Justice Roberts, was appointed by George Bush. Now, I don't consider George Bush a conservative. I consider him a neoconservative or a progressive. He's very much a government interventionist. You know, I'm for limited government. I'm for not for the government interfering in the economy or interfering abroad. I'm for very limited government and very little regulation. The market can take care of it. The problem is George Bush appointed Roberts, and apparently we have another closet liberal. Or they prefer to be called progressives today because it doesn't make sense what Roberts did. Because the four dissenting judges were Kennedy, Thomas, Alito, and Scalia. And they said very clearly, and I have a link to the language, is this: the whole bill should have been thrown out as being unconstitutional. There is no justification for this at all. under the Commerce Clause, and that was the clause that Congress and the President argued that it was that provision of the Commerce Clause, namely and this is true, Congress has the power to regulate interstate commerce. And that was the justification, that was the argument that was given in the oral hearings before the Supreme Court. And they were very clear that this was not a tax. They were arguing that it was not a tax. It was a tax penalty. In other words, if you didn't buy the coverage as you were required or mandated, the government was forcing you to buy, then you had to pay a tax penalty. And there was a slip-up. The Solicitor General was arguing in front of the Supreme Court started to call the tax penalty a tax several times. And finally, one of the justices said, "Don't you mean tax penalty?" And everyone got a chuckle out of it. You know, I think Roberts is out to lunch on this. Everyone is scratching their head because, you know, like I said, the government's argument that this was not a tax, not a tax. What Roberts says, it is and he disagrees with the government. He says, no, you can't justify the mandate under the Commerce Clause. That's going way beyond this is regulating non-commerce. Because if I decide not to buy a health insurance plan, I'm not engaging in commerce at all. That's the point. And what the justices were looking for, well, what's the limit of the Commerce Clause? Where's the line that divides what the government can regulate versus not? And this goes way above that line. And that's what the dissenting four justices were saying, that under the Commerce Clause, this cannot be justified, and that was the principal argument of the government, that was their rationale or power or authority to go forth with this legislation. That's what they were citing, that the Constitution provided them the authority or the power to do this. Not their taxing authority. They specifically drafted this bill, the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, that it was specifically not a tax, and they did it for a very political reason. And that's where I'm leading on this. Because you remember that during the campaign, President Obama repeatedly said, mark my words, I will not increase taxes on anyone below earning less than $250,000. Remember that? I mean, I have the clip. I'm not going to play the clip, but it's in my notes. There's a YouTube video there. You can listen to it. He's rather clear. See, the problem is, if you view this as a tax, then he's lied to you. He's misled you. So what the Supreme Court said today in a 5-4 decision is that the Congress is justified or does have the authority or the power to mandate that individuals buy health insurance under their taxing powers. Now, that's not how the bill was written. And that's what the Supreme Court is doing. They're rewriting the bill. They're giving them the justification to say it's constitutional. Thank you, Mr. Roberts. I think Mr. Roberts has now been outed. I hope he enjoys his cocktail parties in Washington with his liberal progressive friends, because the conservatives and the right are mad isn't half of it. And they're let's face it, I'm not surprised, because I always thought George W. Bush's son was just like his father. His father was a noted progressive moderate Republican, what used to be called a country club Republican or a Rockefeller Republican. That's what his dad was. And guess what? Sons are very much like their dads. And see, that's my problem with Mitt Romney. George Romney, Governor George Romney, was also a Rockefeller progressive liberal. They didn't use the word progressive then. They were liberal Republicans or moderate Republicans. You know, that's big government light. And that's my concern about Mitt Romney. Now, right now, Mitt Romney is going to be the Republican nominee for president, and he quickly came out making it very clear that on the first day he will make proposals to Congress that they immediately repeal Obamacare, which is, I'm glad to hear it. The problem is when he was governor of Massachusetts, he also mandated health insurance. Now, his argument today is, well, okay, it made sense for Massachusetts because it was a very small percentage of the population that were uninsured. You know, why do you, you know, it made sense for Massachusetts to do that, but he would not at all. He's not in favor of Obamacare, and he's not saying that other states should adopt what Massachusetts did. The problem I have with it, people don't radically flip-flop like that. I truly don't buy his argument. And that's one of the reasons, face it, Mitt Romney is a progressive. He's a moderate Republican. He's just like Daddy Bush and Sonny Bush. They were both progressives. They were moderate Republicans. And what happened? Under George Bush Sr., I like to call him Daddy Bush, he broke his promise concerning new taxes. And what did his son do? Oh, his son cut taxes, but he ran up massive deficits, and he said he was against nation building, and lo and behold, he gets us in a preventive war in Iraq. And I was very much on the fence with that. I still have reservations with it. I supported him, you know, once he decided to do it and got the backing of Congress as well as some nations, but other nations or allies. But I really had mixed feelings and reservations about the whole Iraqi war situation. You know, but you see, it's true that Saddam, you know, the left likes to point out, well, where were the weapons of mass destruction? He had them. They were chemical and biological. He didn't have nuclear. There are at least three types, major categories of weapons of mass destruction, namely biological agents as well as chemical. And Saddam Hussein had them. He used them against his own people. And we discovered them there, and a lot of them went to Syria. So it's not a case, even though a lot of people said the main reason we went in there was that. No, not really. That was one of the reasons. You know, because I can play, I don't have links to that, but I've viewed YouTube clips where you have Democrats, both in the Clinton years and the early years of the Bush administration, that were hawks on this. They wanted to go in and get Saddam Hussein. It's only later that they changed their tune. You know, everyone was on board with the invasion of Iraq. Not everyone, but most of the Democrats and Republicans. Remember, this is after 9/11. Now, I somewhat did a diversion there, but the point I was trying to make is a progressive, a way to think of a progressive, it's someone that thinks that the answer to every problem is a government program. And that means intervention in the economy domestically, and it also means intervention abroad, nation building, empire building. So you have both right-wing and left-wing progressives. But they're big government types. They think that the answer is more and more government. They're for big government. Now, they like to, in the Republican Party, many of them like to, they like to talk conservative. But you got to follow their actions. And Bush passed the Medicare Part D drug entitlement. And this is, you know, Medicare is broke. It's running massive deficits. It can't be sustained over time. Like I said yesterday when I was discussing illegal immigration, there are at least 10,000 Americans every day that are retiring. and becoming eligible for Social Security and Medicare. The baby boom generation, I need to check my numbers because someone threw out a number that said the baby boom generation was 80 million. My sources say it's 76 million, but the point is the baby boom generation is large. It's just started to retire and become eligible for, actually for the last 2 years, they've been eligible for Medicare, and starting this year, the leading edge is eligible for Social Security. Well, that unfunded liability is more and more of them are going to retire. So what's going to happen is we're going to be running more and more deficits, not only with Medicare, which already is running deficits and has for many years, but also with Social Security, which means the general tax revenues have to make up the difference. We have a problem, folks. You know, over the last 60 to 70 years, starting with FDR with Social Security and Lyndon Baines Johnson with Medicare, you have been promised certain benefits, both retirement benefits, disability benefits under Social Security, and medical benefits, health, doctor and hospital benefits under Medicare. The problem is you've been overpromised. There's not enough money to pay for that. That's what's called unfunded liabilities. And if you think the national debt is bad, you know, it's going to hit around $16 trillion by the end of September. Our unfunded liabilities, principally for Social Security, Medicare, all the parts, as well as Medicaid, it is somewhere, you get a range of estimates, from roughly about $70 trillion, to over $120 trillion. You know, based on the actuarial assumptions, you're going to get a range. My point is, to put it in perspective, the gross domestic product of the United States, this is all the goods and services produced in the United States for this year, is estimated to be a little over $5.3, $5.4 trillion. In other words, we have a national debt that exceeds, for the first time in many, many years since World War II, where our national debt exceeds, that's the gross debt, that's the total debt, exceeds our production of all our goods and services for the entire year. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. Then you got to look at the unfunded liabilities. You know, we're never going to pay, though. There's not enough money in the world. But, you know, the statistic, I don't have the current number, but the GDP for the entire world is somewhere between $60 and $70 trillion. That's the low estimate. That's all the goods and services for the entire world. The entire world. You see what I'm trying to say? What's going to happen is your Medicare benefits are going to have to be cut, and so is your Social Security benefits are going to be cut. And there are fixes that needs to be done, or you're not going to have anything. Because if you don't, right now, if both parties do not do the right thing, do not do the responsible thing, and reform both of those programs, ultimately, the United States goes bankrupt, and you get nothing, nothing. So, yes, you know, the Democratic Party and the progressives can demagogue this issue all they want, but they're being highly irresponsible. You know, the reason why they're doing it is they largely have been the advocates for those programs. As I said yesterday, what we're witnessing throughout Europe and in the United States is the crack up of the welfare state. You know, promises were made that cannot be kept to future generations. And what you got to understand, if you talk to any young person today, they don't plan to be ever getting Social Security and Medicare because they know what I'm saying is true. You know, both Medicare and Social Security are a pay-as-you-go system. In other words, the people that are working today pay for those that are now retired or on Medicare or eligible for it and collecting. They're eligible for it to the extent that they have medical problems and claims. That's where the money comes from. And what I'm trying to say is all that money that they're collecting today, both from Social Security and Medicare, is not enough to pay for the benefits. We're running massive deficits in Medicare. Yet why am I giving you this history? Well, we've had the Supreme Court just say, it didn't say Obamacare was good. It just said it's constitutional. We can give you a legal argument that this was really, you could have written this as under your tax powers. What is not the function of the Supreme Court to legislate? Its function is to interpret. It's not to rewrite the bill and make it constitutional, and that's what Roberts is doing. You know, what's more important, read the dissenting opinion. It's unanimously against it. It's unconstitutional, and it goes to the point that the justification given for Obamacare was that Congress had the power under the Commerce Clause, where they can regulate interstate commerce to force you to engage in commerce and buy a health care plan. And that's nutty. That's why I wasn't surprised it could have gone the other way. This is the first time in the entire history of the United States that the federal government has told you, you must buy this. And this happens to be a government-approved health insurance plan. And if you don't buy this, you have to pay a tax penalty. And believe me, that penalty, $695, is definitely right now much less than what you would have to pay. Even if you're a young person, you're going to pay at least $1,000. Depends on your age, your sex, and all that. But and it depends on how big the group is. But your employer, and to the extent that he requires you to pay a percentage of it, the premium for even a young person is going to be, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of $1,000 to $1,500. So it's definitely less. So what's going to happen is many thousands of small employers that are currently offering health insurance are going to do away with it. They're going to say, you're on your own. Go pay the penalty. I can't afford it. You know, I've said in past shows, I used to market most of my clients were small to medium-sized businesses. And I would approach them, and usually the first thing that they wanted to provide their employees was a good health insurance plan, because it covers the owner. The owner's one of the employees, and he is typically married and has children. And to the extent that the business is successful, they want to do the right thing and cover their employees. It's not like they're mean, greedy businessmen that don't want to provide health insurance. They got to compete with other businesses. So 9 times out of 10, the principal reason that they didn't do it initially is they simply didn't have the money. They couldn't afford it. Now, once they were in a position to do it, they would provide a plan, and over time, the more and more successful they are, they would get a better plan, you know, either more coverage, more benefits, a lower deductible, whatever. And that's all changed today. So what's going to happen is many of your small businesses are going to drop the plan and basically say, you know, buy it yourself or pay the penalty. You see, this Obamacare was designed to ultimately to destroy private insurance, because that is exactly what's going to happen. It's already happening. Employers are making the calculation that, listen, times are rough, business is not very good. I literally cannot afford to buy small or medium sized group health insurance. So, employee, you and some that have it are canceling it. and basically telling their employees, go pay the penalty. And it's going to grow. You see, the government shouldn't be in the health insurance business, and that's what they are. They're injecting themselves into it. And I don't think we've heard the last of this, because I truly think, and this is where I'm going to get into the politics of it, but I need to lay the groundwork. So what you got to understand, the decision was 5-4, the Supreme Court held that the mandate is constitutional, the whole bill is constitutional. Now, there's some, that's not technically true. There's some parts of it they had some issues with, but the message is, you know, Obama won. This is a win for President Obama. It's saying what he did with the help of the Democratic Congress when they controlled it is constitutional. 5-4 decision. It was going to be a 5-4 decision whether it went the other way or not. Now, why do I think this is really a very short victory? I'll tell you what this is going to do, first of all. This is really going to energize the Republican base. You have no idea how this is going to energize the Republican base. Because the majority of Americans, like myself, I draw a line. You know, I pay taxes, but you don't tell me how to spend my money, period. I'm perfectly capable of doing that myself. And see, that's what the government is doing. We know better than you how you should spend your money, and you will buy this, or else you're going to pay a penalty. That doesn't sit well with people. And what also doesn't sit well with people, the vast majority of Americans have good group coverage. The overwhelming majority of Americans do. And the initial promise, and you've heard this once and you're still hearing it, you can keep your doctor and you can keep your plan. No, that's not going to happen, because what did I just say? Many businesses, not all, but many businesses are going to say, no, I can't do it anymore, bye. Because see, what's happening is the premiums are going up, up, and up. Even when you didn't have government in it, you know, one of the things, and this has been many years ago, but I used to sell group health insurance. And every year there'd be a premium renewal. And I work with a number of insurance companies. I would get bids, some of the best insurance companies, but I would get bids, you know, two or three, and show the employer, you know, here's plan A, here's what carrier A offers you this, carrier B offers you this, carrier C, you know, what do you want? I'm trying to tailor to what his needs are. But this market is very, very price sensitive. And see, what would drive me nuts, someone would come in right behind me, would be cheaper, even though I went out and got good plans with competing companies, would be cheaper. And 9 times out of 10, they were cheaper because the company had a reputation for not paying large claims. And I would tell my client, listen, there's a reason why this company is a lot less expensive, their plan. You know, they might only have $1 million lifetime maximum instead of a $3 million or a $5 million or an unlimited. That's a big driver. So, yeah, is it unlikely that everyone is going to have $1 million? Yes. Over your lifetime, yes. But if it does happen, you know, a better plan is one that has a higher lifetime maximum, whether it's $3 million, $5 million, or unlimited. And that's just one little detail. But businesses, especially if money is tight, and when you're in a recession or a really slow economic growth situation, either they cancel all their coverage or they get a much poorer plan. And now the alternative is you got to buy an expensive approved government plan. I'll tell you what large numbers. I'm talking tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of small, medium-sized companies are going to do. They're going to cancel their coverage. And that's the objective. The objective of President Obama and the progressive Democrats is single payer. That's what they want, and that's what Obamacare was designed to do. It was designed to ultimately destroy private insurance. Not immediately. They couldn't do that immediately. And that's why Obamacare should be repealed. It's an awful piece of legislation. It dramatically will increase the cost, your premiums, of all. So you know, if you're lucky, you work for an employer that pays 100%. But even the most generous companies typically will require you to either pay 100% of any dependent coverage or 50%, which is a more typical situation. So what you're going to see initially the next couple of years, assuming Obamacare stays as the law, that the I've talked to people every day that they've seen their premiums go up 20-25%. And this is just the start of it. And that's a big increase. That's a big increase. What is going to happen over time, not immediately, but over several years, if Obamacare went in effect, more and more companies would simply not offer group coverage, period. Can't afford it anymore. They will be priced out of the market. It's that simple. You know, the initial objective, and I went over yesterday, the rationale for Obamacare was we have 43 million Americans that are uninsured. And I made the point that, and it's not me, other people have done this analysis, but let's assume today, because the numbers I've been hearing is, well, they're 50 million today. What they don't tell you is a good number of those consist of illegal immigrants, people that are covered under Medicaid that simply need to fill out the paperwork, and they would be covered. They have coverage. If you're poor in the United States, you can. Now, I'm not saying this is terrific coverage or you're going to get the best of care, but we do have Medicaid for the poor. And that includes, in that number, includes that. Then you have people that are between jobs, and you also have people that can afford it and decide to decline it. The bottom line is, if you get down to the people that, frankly, truly are uninsured and don't qualify for Medicaid, don't really have the money to buy their own, is probably in the neighborhood of 10 million people, 10 to 15 million people. You don't change the entire healthcare delivery and insurance system for 10 million people, and that's what they did. And there were truly, it's a wrecking ball. And who went along with them? I think wrongly, the large insurance companies. You see, like any industry, there it's divided. There are companies that specialize in large companies, large corporations. They don't do individual coverage, most of them. They don't want the small groups, you know, under 9. Or even small groups under 50, you know, they typically market to large companies. Now, they will do the administration. I'm getting too technical. I need to back down on this. What I'm trying to say is what the insurance companies, especially these large corporations, owned insurance companies, as well the hospitals, we're looking at is, hey, this is a great opportunity if we really craft this legislation to not only do away with some of our competitors, but we can get all the young people covered. Because that's what this bill was really directed at, the dirty little secret. We're going to force people to buy. That's what the mandate is. We are forcing you to buy insurance. And who are the people most likely not to have insurance? The young people that are opting out, that could pay for it, but decide not to. You see, this is using the government to get into people's pocket. This is why I don't like private public-private partnerships. This is what crony capitalism is all about. It's large corporations, drug companies, hospitals, insurance companies got together with the government, namely President Obama and his minions, and they drafted this. And who gets screwed out of this? The young people get screwed out of this. And people that, frankly, don't have the money to buy coverage. Let me phrase that differently. They have other needs that come first, like food, clothing, transportation. But now you're going to be forced to buy it. And if you don't, and most people won't get it anyway, the IRS is going to get in your checking book and get it. Initially, it's only $95 the first year, but by 2016, it's $695, or 2.5% of your income. And you better believe in 2017 on out, every year it's going to go up. See, ultimately, it's going to go up to where you're going to have to... You're going to go get the health insurance. That's what they're trying to do. That's the game that's being played. And we have another Harvard lawyer. Man, I think a qualification or a disqualification to be president, or I say this, we have a Harvard lawyer in the White House now, and we have another Harvard lawyer in business school as well running. And we have another Harvard lawyer, you know, and they're all progressives. I'm blaming Harvard law today, because when they go there, they get the progressive philosophy, big government is the answer, and who gets screwed? It's the little guy, not the Harvard lawyer that's making the big bucks. This is not a for the people. You know, why do you think all the drug companies and your hospitals and insurance companies got together in the back rooms with closed doors and designed this because they weren't going to make money? You're dreaming. They're going to make money. But who's going to lose? Ultimately going to lose. It's young people and people that currently decide because they know their own situation. See, most people, if they can afford health insurance, most people will buy health insurance, especially as you get older, because they're afraid of the bills that would happen should they have a heart attack, a stroke, cancer, an accident. So most people that are working in a company, they, especially if your company offers it, but they look for employers that provide good medical coverage. Now, there are a lot of things that could be done, you know, so right now, what politically, and I really digress because I need to get the heart of the matter here. The base of the Republican Party will be energized over this, but more importantly, what I think is going to happen is the Tea Party is going to get energized. And if you notice the title of this segment, and let me scroll to the top. The Tea Party tax revolt. I think it's about time that the Tea Party march on Washington and rally in Washington. Let's have a Tea Party in Washington on the 4th of July. I know it's rather short notice because this came as a big surprise. But we have a Supreme Court justice with four others, the majority said this is a tax. Well, if it's a tax, fine. Let's have a tax revolt. Let's get the message to both the Supreme Court and the House of Representatives and the Senate and the White House that the American people do not want Obamacare, want it repealed. Take the kids and watch the fireworks. And they have terrific fireworks in Washington, D.C. on July 4th. I know it's a short notice, but let's flood that place. Let's have a 4th of July Tea Party in Washington, D.C., and better yet, because I know a lot of you couldn't do that, let's do that across the country. Let's have the Tea Party is called a Tea Party after the Tea Party in Boston Harbor. It was a tax revolt. And that ultimately led to the American Revolution, because you know what the British did then? They passed the Coercive Acts. They shut down because property was destroyed. And I'm not condoning what the Tea Party did then, but the reaction out of the Crown and the Parliament really was they shut down the port of Boston, and they made sure that the governor, they limited town meetings, because they made sure that the governor was beholding or accountable to the Crown, and he was instructed to clamp down until the tea was paid for. Now there's more to it than that. Also, quartering of troops was involved, but they overreacted. We used to, in the colonies, they called it the Intolerable Acts. Well, I think this mandate is intolerable. We need a tax revolt, and the Tea Party needs to reactivate. I'm not saying you're not active now, but it's been quite a while since we've had tea parties, both locally and in Washington, D.C., and I think we now have a reason to march, a reason to rally. And now media has to cover it. Let's be real candid. If a million people showed up, I hope 3 million would show up, but if a million people would march on the Capitol building, on the Supreme Court, on the White House, just marched, very peaceful. This is a peaceful assembly, and we're expressing our views that we do not support Obamacare. And there's been poll after poll that the majority of people do not. It runs between 55% to 65%. And believe me, when more people become knowledgeable of what's really in that bill, they're going to revolt. You know, they want to hire over 10,000. I think the exact number is 13,000 more IRS employees. Why? To collect this tax. This is a new tax. Remember what Obama said? If you make less than $250,000, you will not be taxed at all. And he listed them. And I have the clip there. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a new tax. The Supreme Court, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court said this is a tax. That's what made it constitutional. Even though the federal government and the Congress said, no, it's not a tax. And I have the famous clip when George Stephanopoulos was interviewing President Obama, and President Obama took him a tax. No, George, it's not a tax. It's not a tax. It's not a tax. I knew it was a tax. Anyone that's read the bill knew it was a tax. They didn't want to call it a tax. Even though they were forcing you, you either buy the coverage or you're going to pay a tax penalty. A tax penalty, it's not a tax if it's a tax penalty. Excuse me, it's a tax. Now, we're not going to quibble with words, Mr. President, and now you have the Supreme Court saying it's a tax. That's the only reason that your law was upheld today. And shame on Chief Justice Roberts. Shame on you. I'm very disappointed, because doesn't make sense what you did, sir. We have a tyranny in Washington. They're getting out of hand. Get back to my point. We can't afford this. This was supposed to reduce the burden of health care. It does the opposite. It increases it. It creates a huge bureaucracy. You know, 10 or 13,000 IRA agents are just the tip of the iceberg. Many, many more government organizations are set up. This is government intervention in the economy. It's to make government larger, and ultimately it's to go to a single payer. That's the hidden agenda that Obama is, when he's in front of his supporters, namely union supporters, is honest about. Now, oh, no, no, I'm not for that. He's lying to you. That's what they all want, is single payer. In other words, even though you're happy with exactly what you have, tough luck. Tough. That's the arrogance of power. That's an elitist attitude. And you get it from the Harvard Law School grads, unfortunately. I don't know what they put in their water, but it seems that that's one of the attributes of when you get that degree. I'm not impressed. Not impressed. Because I fully agree with the four dissenting justices. This is way beyond anything that the founding fathers and the framers of the Constitution imagined when they wrote that Constitution. It was, and as far as I am concerned, is unconstitutional. The decision today is more than a stretch. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. But it's an opportunity. It's an opportunity to rally against Obamacare so it's repealed. That should be the number one objective next year, is to repeal Obamacare. Just because the Supreme Court says it's constitutional, that doesn't mean it's good. It's horrific. We can't afford it. This is making the deficit larger, and it's making the unfunded liabilities larger. This is the exact opposite of what you should be doing. This is taking us off the fiscal cliff. This is irresponsible. This is fiscal insanity. And now they have the blessing of the Supreme Court, thanks to a Bush appointee. Not surprised. Not surprised. See, that's why you need to vet rigorously your appointees. And you also should vet vigorously the candidates. Truly disappointed in Justice Roberts. And I'm sure four of the dissenting justices are too. You know, the suspicion is, now I have no idea, we'll probably never learn it unless one of the justices drops it. The suspicion is that Roberts was really with the dissenters, that it was going to go 5-4 the other way, and some pressure was brought to swing at the 5-4, basically swing the Roberts vote from being with the dissenters to this justification. See, they needed a justification to say it's constitutional. And like I said, and I'll repeat it again, the government and Congress, when Congress passed this bill, when it was controlled by the Democratic Party, both in the House and Senate, and signed by the White House, the justification or the authority, you know, you need is the justification for this bill, not the rationale why we need it, but what is the constitutional authority, was the Commerce Clause. And I'm familiar with it. I'm saying they're out of their mind. That's why if you want to dig deeper, go to the dissenting opinion and read what they say. They say the same thing. They cite the Wickard case, Filburn case, not the Wickard. anyway, I don't know. I don't. This is not. I'm not giving you the blow by blow legal analysis. There's plenty of that, but I think this is really. Remember, there are about 130 days to election, and this brings back front and center Obamacare. This will be an issue in this campaign. There's no way around it. It'll be part of the debates. So I'm glad, in a funny way, I'm glad that this happened. Totally unexpected. See, I thought it could go 5-4 either way, but the justification was going to be the Commerce Clause. There's going to be some argument one way or the other that this was okay under the Commerce Clause. Instead, the surprise, surprise, well, you can't do it under your, you know, that's what the Chief Justice said. Well, you can't really do this under the Commerce Clause. That don't make any sense. And that's what everybody with some common sense was saying. But he says you could do it as a tax under with your taxing power. So it stands at being constitutional because of that. I call that rewriting legislation completely. Because what the four dissenting justices were saying is, it's under the justification and rationale given for this legislation was to regulate commerce, and this does not regulate commerce. This forces people to engage in commerce, which is unprecedented. There's no case law. This is what they call first impressions. There are a number of issues in this case, the principal one being what I'm just saying, the mandate. There's no precedent for it. This is the first time they looked at this issue, our first impression of an issue. So it's a very long decision that I have not had time to read. I've skimmed parts of it. And I have links to it that for you legal beavers out there, I have the link to the text so you can read it at your leisure. I wanted to give you my take, and it's more of, I think this is going to energize the Tea Party. I think we're going to see a revival of the Tea Party, both on the 4th of July and the coming months, where we're going to have rallies and marches across the country. And the 2 to 3 major issues will be control of government spending, namely balance the budget, jobs, illegal immigration as it relates to jobs, namely we have at least 10 million, if not more. I think it's closer to 15 million, but who knows exactly. Illegal immigrants working in the country, that where you have over 25 million Americans seeking a full-time job, those jobs should go to American citizens, period. And the immigration laws should be enforced. Now, that was the last show, but if you want details of that, I would go back to that show. But I think jobs will be not the number one issue, follow closely behind government spending out of control. We want to hear what both candidates propose in terms of budgets and cutting down the deficits. We want specifics, and this goes to Romney. I want the program laid out. I'd like to hear what his budgetary numbers are for the first fiscal year he's going to be president. I think that's a fair question that should be asked for both candidates. And I think it's going to be very revealing, and I'm afraid probably disturbing, because neither of them are going to balance the budget. You know, we can't continue every year running deficits where we spend more than we collect in revenues of over $1 trillion. You just can't keep doing that, period. It has to come. It's coming to an end right now. See, the Federal Reserve Chairman, who's chairman of our central bank, knows he can't keep doing this. See, the dirty little secret of quantitative easing, which was creating money, is they were the last buyers of resort of Treasury securities that were issued. See, when you run a deficit that we've been doing, and the total for the Obama's 4 years will be over $5 trillion, you got to auction off Treasury securities. Well, at some point in time and over time, you're going to have fewer and fewer people buying it, because the perception grows that the risk of Treasury securities is going up. You see, it's not just me, but other people that observe this of the opinion that the interest that's paid on securities in terms of is compressed or suppressed anywhere from 2 to 3 basis points. Some would even say higher. That's another way of saying they're not paying enough interest given the risk. That's why a lot of smart people have gotten out of Treasury securities. Now, you've had a recent flight to them from people, mainly from people getting out of European currencies and banks. There's a flight to safety, and besides gold, another place to go is Treasury securities. But that's a temporary situation. The United States government just cannot keep running up these massive deficits. Eventually, that game stops, and interest rates will go up significantly. And when that happens, currently the United States pays annually interest between $250 to $300 billion. That is artificially low. As rates go back to return to a normal situation, which they eventually will, the interest rate component, especially as the national debt gets bigger and bigger, is going to grow bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, to eventually it crowds out all other government expenditures. So the bottom line is the federal government has to control spending and has to balance the budget. We can't have this continue. It doesn't matter whether it's a Democrat or a Republican, because guess what? The marketplace will discipline, just like it disciplined Greece. You know, Greece interest rates have shot up. So have Spain and Italy. And that'll happen to the United States. Can't say when, but it will happen if we continue doing what we're doing. So Obamacare has to be repealed. We need a tax revolt. I think you're going to see a tax revolt. The Tea Party will be a leading force in this tax revolt, demanding the repeal of Obamacare. And see, the reason why I'm really glad that this has been brought back to the front stage and really cannot be ignored now. Have you noticed how President Obama really doesn't want to talk about two things? One is his job record, the high unemployment rates, because it's terrible. 40 months of the unemployment rate being over 8%? You have to go back to the Deep Depression days to find a similar record. Now, yes, it were higher during the Great Depression, but not much higher if you use the U6 rates, the official rates, because the low rate, the one the government likes to trumpet, is U3 or 8.2%. But the one that economists really look at is the U6 rate, and that's at 14.8%. And that is comparable or close to Great Depression rates. And when you have those types of rates for 40 months, in essence, your entire administration, that alone should defeat you. But if you have something that is really unpopular with the majority of the people, namely Obamacare, that's the second thing he doesn't want to bring up. You see, initially they thought they could really promote this and get more and more people behind it. Well, it's just the opposite. As people become more and more aware of what's really going on and get clued in, especially your young people that don't have coverage, they wake up and they say, hell no, I'm not for this. So the combination of high unemployment rates, an economy that's going into recession, and that's a point I need to make. I thought that if the decision went 5-4 the other way, namely the Obamacare was declared unconstitutional, that could have really turned it around. I'm not saying 100%, but really could help President Obama. for the simple reason that would significantly reduce the uncertainty that small businesses, the job creators, have. They could say, okay, Obamacare is going to go by the boards, is dead. We can go back to the way we were happy with. So, and that would be helpful. Now, I'm not saying we don't need to repeal Obamacare, because we do in its entirety. Start again. Start again. I've heard some people say, well, there are portions of it that are not bad. No, 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 no. You don't know all the dependencies. Wipe it out and propose your own solution that truly, truly makes healthcare affordable and portable and individually owned. And where you have tort reform that caps damages to health-related cases that would reduce the cost. There are a lot of things that could be done that weren't done. You know, I'm a big advocate of having health savings accounts that you match up or combine with catastrophic coverage. That's my recommendation. And there are a lot of things that you can do to get to bend down the cost, the rising cost of medical care treatment costs, hospitalization costs. There are a whole range of things that could be done. And there, and what I always scratch my head, well, why? It makes sense. Anyone that has some common sense. Well, the reason why a lot of this didn't happen is you have a significant minority in Congress, namely the progressives, that want single payer. So anything that is a rival or a competitor to it, they were against. They were against. Even though privately they know it would make sense. But they were still against, because that's a rival to their favorite. Their choice, again, is single payer. That's what President Obama truly wants, and that's what the Democratic progressives want. That's not what the American people want, and see, they know that. They know that. They know they could never sell that to the general public. So we got this, an abomination of a bill that we can't afford. And keep in mind, we are going into recession. We've had very, you know, we just got a report out that the first quarter numbers were, again, confirmed at 1.9%. And we'll know in July, we'll get the preliminary numbers for the second quarter. I'm really going to be interested in what those numbers are, because I think it's definitely going to be lower than 1.9%. I don't think it's going to be negative, but it will be, you know, my guess it'll be under 1%. Who knows? We'll find out in July. So good news, bad news. The bad news is we still have Obamacare to deal with. The good news is we now have an opportunity to rally behind people that are against Obamacare. That's House Republican candidates, senatorial candidates, as well as presidential candidates. And I know, you know, I'll say it again, Mitt Romney is not my favorite, was not my candidate. My candidate was Ron Paul. But Mitt Romney, any day of the week, is better than Barack Obama. It's that simple. And he is for the repeal. Why I said yesterday I wasn't too happy with the response to of Mitt Romney in terms of illegal immigration, both the decision this Tuesday as well as Obama's announcement concerning his version of the DREAM Act. Anyway, Romney is definitely better than Obama. Is he my choice? No, but we need to do something. Give him a shot. And remember what Obama said, you know, he was going to cut the deficit in half by the end of his 4 years. And if it didn't do that, he doesn't deserve a second term. Well, what has he done? He hasn't cut it in half. You know, the first year was 1.4, and I'm giving you round numbers, is 1.4 trillion. Second year, 1.3 trillion. Third year, 1.3 trillion. Fourth year, looks like it'll be at least $1.3 trillion. Add that up, it's over $5 trillion of deficits. He hasn't cut it in half. He has taken it to a level that's twice, actually more than, it's between two to three times more than the Bush's worst year was last year, and that's when the Democratic Party controlled the House and Senate. For all practical purposes, it was a Democratic budget, even though it happened under George W. Bush's watch. Now, what Bush should have done is vetoed it. He didn't do it. So we have a president that has led the irresponsible spending. He's added, this is a new entitlement program that radically will change, if it's not repealed, it will radically change health care in the United States. And I mean, ultimately, I do agree with him. This is a wrecking ball piece of legislation. It is designed ultimately to get you to single payer. By ultimately destroying private insurance and having fewer and fewer people covered by private insurance. Really, the only people who are going to be left are people that are working for very large corporations that are very successful, that can afford very, very good coverage. Your Microsofts, your Apples, your Googles, but your very large corporations, they're the only ones that will be able to afford good, call it Cadillac health benefits for their full-time employees. Small business can't do this. Medium-sized business can't do this. They could under the existing system, but that is exactly what Obamacare does. More and more people will be forced out of what will happen is, you won't be able to keep your plans because your employer is going to have to cancel them because they can't afford them. And always remember, like I started this, the real objective of Obamacare was to get the uninsured, which are principally young people, 18 to 29, to pay premiums. They are the largest group of people that don't have health insurance. Because most of them elect not to have. Many of them can afford it. It was to get those people to pay it, and part of those premiums, part is going to pay the few medical bills they have, but the majority of that money was going to go pay for people that are older and sicker, and part of it was going to be profit to your drug companies, to your hospitals, to your large group insurance carriers. That was the deal. But the plan was ultimately, and that's going to be very expensive, and ultimately what was going to happen is there'd be fewer and fewer people on group medical plans, period. That's the bottom line. That's the ultimate objective. I'm going to wrap it up, but I wanted to give you my reactions. The Tea Party, I think, will be starting on the 4th, but in the future weeks, rallying. We will have across the nation Tea Party tax revolt rallies with the repealing of Obamacare being one of the objectives, but also balancing the budget and cutting expenditures being number two. And if we do those two things, then we can get this economy moving again and also reducing taxes. You know, those are if you want to know right now what I think the three major aims, I'll give you three or four. Number one is cut federal government spending and get the budget balance. Number two is the repeal of Obamacare. Number three is no more bailouts at all. Number four is tax reform, lower taxes, either a fair tax or my fair tax less, or a flat tax. Americans are overtaxed. And that's the joke of this thing. This makes the current tax code a lot more complicated. They have to hire over 10,000 more people to collect the penalties, making sure you've paid your penalty. Did you buy your coverage or not? And if you haven't, you're going to be hit with a penalty, and they're going to come after you. They're going to come after you. They're going to take it out of your checking account. Oh, you didn't know that. Well, you better start getting up on the bill. So if you're out there, you deliberately chose not to buy a plan, guess what? If Obamacare stands, they're going to force you to do it. That's the consequence of the decision today. You thought you were going to get free coverage. I know. I've heard this from the, if Obama gets his plan, we're going to get free coverage. No, you're not. No, you're not. The aim was to pick your pocket. But if Obamacare stands, by 2016, you'll be paying nearly $700 penalties. Or you could buy, a $2,000 health insurance plan. Which would you do? You see what they're playing? Now, the smart thing to do, if you could afford it, is to buy the health insurance. Because you're not going to get any coverage when you pay the penalty, even though it's a fraction, you know, depending on your age and your sex and all this, it's going to be, 25 to 30% of what it would cost you if you had to buy the actual health insurance. That's what's going on. You got to pay attention. Because guess what? There's sharks out there that'll take your money, and that's what they're doing. They're using the government to take your money. There should be a tax revolt. Americans are overtaxed, and we have a government that's out of control in terms of spending. And don't look for help from the Supreme Court at all. I wrote them off. They're a lost cause. I said it could go either way. Either way. And it went the other way. The coin, it spun around and it came up tails. Tails I lose, and the American people lost. Now, there are a lot of people on the left that are celebrating. Let them celebrate. Let them think this is the greatest thing since sliced bread. You see, before the oral arguments, they thought this was a slam dunk. And then when the justice started asking questions, they said, oh, my God. You see, what happens is you get groupthink. Had the people on the left actually talked to people that, let's say, are objective or honest, they would say, are you crazy? You're going to insist, tell Americans that they're going to have to buy this or else get penalized? And that's what the justice were saying in the questions. This is way beyond any the imagination of the framers of the constitutions that when they wrote that Commerce Clause that's what it was going to be used for. We're experiencing another revolution, a peaceful revolution, but a revolution. American peoples are getting madder and madder. And if we don't start turning around this economy and have a peace and prosperity economy and really institute, we have to shrink the federal government, but we all, and you need to do that. And I'll wrap this up. This is a point that's, I heard somebody make that I really think is wrong. He was trying to make the case, well, we really got to focus in on growth and really be quiet about cutting government spending is called austerity. No. You're not getting it. You're never going to get on a growth path. You're never going to get people wanting to open businesses and expand their businesses and growing until you get control, which means cut government spending and stop the deficit spending, get the government balanced, and live within your means. It's very simple. Until that happens, you're never going to get back on a high growth path. Yes, the message has to be growth. But you have to explain why it's necessary, first of all, for the government to downsize. You know, we're in the middle of a bubble, and the bubble is the government is growing bigger and bigger, and that ultimately is going to pop. It's popping right now. the people that really understand the economics, that really understand what's going on, are very, very nervous. We're in 1929. We're on a brink of another global world depression. We're a lot smarter. We know things that definitely don't work. But the problem is we don't know how to fix it, or we're unwilling to fix it. We're unwilling to fix it for the simple reason we have to admit, not only in the United States, but in other countries, that all the benefits we promised you in retirement benefits, health insurance, any other benefits, we can't afford anymore. The party's over. The party's over. It's not happy days. The party's over. It's going to happen in the United States. It has to happen in Europe. It has to happen in the United Kingdom. The welfare state has been a failure, has been a failure. Hey, listen, it took 60, 70, 80 years, but it's a failure because you overpromised. That, in a nutshell, is the problem. We can't afford the benefits that we promised you. If you're American, that means your Medicare benefits are going to be cut. They are. There's no way to sugarcoat that. And same thing with Social Security. And that's going to be bitter medicine. And when that happens, see, that's why the Democrats don't want to talk about that. Because then now, wait a minute. Now, who were the people really advocating all this? Now, most of the real politicians are dead, long dead. FDR's been dead for many decades. LBJ is dead for many decades. George W. Bush will be around, and so will be Obama, if Obamacare goes. You know, Obamacare is just another big promise that's never going to be delivered on. Because what's happening already is the numbers, the cost of that, are already doubled and tripled. This was supposed to save money and bend down the curve, and it's not doing. So see you at the Tea Party. Have a great 4th of July. And I said last show, I didn't play it, but what I suggest you do on the 4th of July, if you have some time and you know, to get yourself motivated, there's a clip on YouTube called The Meaning of Independence Day. A gentleman is speaking, but he'll give you the real meaning of Independence Day. And it's about 6 minutes, 5-6 minute clip. I urge you to, on the 4th of July, listen to that clip, because it's really relevant to what we're talking about. You know, what the colonists wanted to be is independent from the whims of Parliament in terms of taxation. You know, there's been, if anyone has taken some American history, they know it. We had a series of, well, first we had the Navigation Acts, but then we had the stamp tax, molasses tax. There have been a number, long story short, what the Parliament was doing in England is putting taxes on various goods, such as molasses, cloth, paper, tea, wine. And they were doing that because they needed the money. They ran up a big debt. Sound familiar? They were going to tax the colonists. And the colonists didn't like it because they didn't have representation. Now we have representation, and we get something an order of magnitude 10 times greater. And this really complicates, adds more complication to an already huge Internal Revenue Code and regulation, which needs to be done away with. We need to do away with that code, do away with the IRS, and go to a consumption-based tax. We need a revolt, a transparent, where everyone knows what it is, and it's collected. You determine when it's collected, when you buy a new good or service. That's the fair tax. And that's what I recommend in the tax area. But what we first have to do is get Obamacare repealed. And the only way to do that, we have to first get their attention. And that means rallying. That means marching. I know it's hot. We've had several days of over 100 in Dallas. But you should get real hot and real mad with what Obamacare is all about, because that was an attempt to get into your pocket. The time is 4:54. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We are the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Have a happy 4th of July. The next show will be on the 11th of July, because I debated whether or not to give today's show. I said, well, if I give today's show, I'm definitely not going to try to squeeze one for next week. So the next show will be from 3 to 5 on Wednesday, July 11th. Have a happy 4th of July, and now back to the music.